Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Kamal Jarrett, the founder of the hot sauce and marinade company Hillside Harvest. Kamal immigrated to Boston at age 3 from Jamaica, and he grew up fusing together the flavors of the Caribbean with that of traditional American cuisine. As his passion for food grew, so did his desire to build a business that could seamlessly blend the two cultures through deliciously balanced offerings, and thus Hillside Harvest began. Kamal, thank you so much for joining us today. Please share what you do at Hillside Harvest and what influenced you to start it.
Hey, Ashley, good to be here. Thanks for having me. So I'm a founder of Hillside Harvest, as you mentioned. I currently do just about everything. I'm the sole employee of the business. We started back in January of 2019. And for me, you know, I was a product manager at another large consumer packaged goods firm here in Massachusetts, and, you know, was charged with essentially running a portion of that business, and thought to myself that, you know, I would love to do something like this one day for myself. And I just have an affinity for food. I grew up loving food, was introduced to it, you know, cooking by my aunt who had a restaurant locally, and wanted to go back in that direction. And so, you know, because I was a product manager and understood how to the process of kind of building or understanding consumer needs, building something around consumer needs and launching, I essentially focused on products with Hillside Harvest. And when I, you know, took a look at just the categories within the food space, and essentially things that I could, you know, connect myself with, there's a huge trend, and it's no longer a trend. It's really a movement with spice kind of growing it for the U.S. palate, and specifically hot sauces. And so I thought that was a really cool category to at least start in. The goal has always been to build out, you know, Hillside Harvest to be kind of a larger CPG. So offering things, you know, everything from condiments to beverages. But we wanted to start with hot sauce because it was such a booming space. It was a fun space, and it was a place where, you know, had some relevance with my cultural background. So I am from Jamaica, grew up here in Massachusetts, and knew that I could tie in a lot of the Caribbean inspiration into things like hot sauce. And that was really key, because when I would go into a supermarket, a lot of times you go and you don't really see things from your home country unless you go down the ethnic aisle or the international aisle. And that's cool. I think those aisles are amazing for folks like me that immigrated here and want a little piece of home. But, you know, the average consumer may not walk down that aisle because it may be, for lack of a better term, foreign to them, right? And so, I wanted to create something that leveraged a lot of the influences that I grew up with from Jamaica, but presented it to the U.S. consumer where they're shopping. And so Hillside Harvest was born based on that theme of leveraging, you know, my background, but providing it in platforms that are familiar or approachable to the U.S. consumer in the spaces where they shop, like the main aisle.
Yeah, very cool. Are the hot sauces that you've created like family recipes, or is it something that you kind of just use as inspiration from the types of food you would eat and then use that to develop your own?
Yeah, it's mostly inspiration. You know, they are loosely based off of recipes. Like my aunt, for example, gave me a Jamaican jerk recipe, but, you know, a lot of times the things that we do for cooking, like for family, just doesn't translate when trying to make it into a product. So playing around with ingredients, playing around with flavors is a key part of my day when kind of developing a new product. But a lot of the products that with the exception of the jerk, a lot of the things that we create is based off of inspiration. So I'll give you an example. There's a dish that I love from Jamaica called Escovedge Fish, and it's essentially a process of using like this pickling of peppers and and carrots and allspice and all these different ingredients and pickling them and then pouring it over fried fish. And the fish is crispy, but then it has like the tanginess of and the spiciness of the pickled peppers.
Tongue twister.
And it's delicious. And so I wanted to create a sauce that embodied that dish that I loved. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, this fall we'll be launching a carrot escabeche, which is essentially those same ingredients, carrot, bell pepper, allspice, onion, in a hot sauce form. And so you can pour that over fish, chicken, pork, whatever, still get that same flavor profile that you would from the traditional dish in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. Just in a new format that's a lot more approachable, a lot, you know, and maybe you don't like fish. And so you can now have that same flavor on something else for the U.S. consumer.
Nice. And what was the process like of actually developing the product and being able to go through testing and tweaking and all of that very exciting stuff?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's where I draw on my background a lot. I think, you know, coming from a product management background, the consumer is at the forefront of everything that I do. And even more so when running a smaller business, we know that you're not going to have, you know, statistically significant, you know, data. We're not going to be able to survey 5,000, 10,000 people. But what we will have is directional data. And so being able to, you know, come up with quick prototypes. So I know the flavor profiles generally that I want to get it to a place where I like it. Ultimately, you know, my opinion doesn't necessarily matter because it's the consumer that matters, but the direction does, it comes from me.
Right.
So making sure that we at least start someplace where it's like, you know, I'd eat this. And then, you know, survey my fiance. Would you eat something like this? Yeah, sure. Okay. And then from there, you know, if you start to get negative feedback, then you tweak it. But from there, I would take it to a farmer's market. And now we're not getting 5,000 people, but maybe we get, you know, 50 people coming and tasting it and giving us feedback. And over the course of a summer, you may get through, you know, 1,000 people that have tasted the product and given you, you know, positive and negative feedback and things that you can then take back to the kitchen and tweak. And so, you know, things like spice level, things like, you know, there's too much ginger, there's too much this, there's too much that, all of that goes into it. And it may take a year or two for the product to ultimately launch because you're taking your time and you're getting as much feedback from, you know, buyers and shoppers and using that feedback to kind of adjust as you go.
Absolutely. And you mentioned something that I want to dive into a little bit more, which is farmers markets, because I've seen here in Massachusetts just so many food-based companies going to farmers markets and really being able to build awareness through them. But with so many farmers markets that are offered throughout the state, what has been your process of actually determining like which ones are worth your time? And because it's kind of like you only have so much time that you can end up focusing on. So how have you known which ones are the best ones to pursue for helping you to reach your goals?
It's a great question because you're right. There has been a huge increase of the number of farmers markets available, which is awesome for folks in various communities that, you know, typically didn't have access to farmers markets. It's awesome that they're all popping up. For us, the food businesses, it's somewhat of a challenge because you can't be everywhere. And right. You're right. It is kind of difficult to determine where to go. You know, for me thus far, it's been proximity and trial of error. So you know, the closest to the Boston area, the better, you know, in the early stages, because I just wanted to get to the local communities where the product is being sold or close to where you know, the stores where we're being sold. I think now that we're kind of branching out, it's now become, you know, there's a number of networks underground kind of that we talk to each other, right? And businesses are telling each other, you know, or helping each other. I would say the food space in Massachusetts is extremely collaborative. And so, you know, there's email threads where you'll pop up a question on logistics or distribution or production or farmers markets, and you'll get, you know, 20, 30 different answers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, in that same vein, there are there are, there's like understandings of, oh, this farmer's market's a really good one. You want to try and see if you can get into, or it's really selective. So try and apply early, you know, or I've done this past market. It's not great, but really great market manager, really great community. You may want to do it, you know, just, you know, once a month or something if you have the opportunity. So there are those networks there that we kind of work off of each other and try to give people recommendations based on our experiences. And a lot of it is trial and error. So your product may be different than someone else's and may do really well at this particular market because the demographic or the proximity to the ocean or whatever the case may be is big for your product. And it may not be the case for someone else. So some of that is trial and error and just understanding, like, you know, what neighborhoods or what you know, areas are best tied into the product that you have.
Yeah, and which makes total sense. And going along with that too, I know that on Hillside Harvest's website, for anyone who goes there, if you go to where to find us, you'll see a very long list of stores that the hot sauces and marinades are in. So what was that process like of being able to actually get the product sold in stores and again, finding the right stores and being able to collaborate that way?
Yeah, for me, it started with just getting out there. The biggest thing for me was I wasn't a salesperson. Like, I was very comfortable being in the background, working with, you know, from my previous jobs, I used to work with engineers and, you know, and you know, help build surveys and the consumer and then build a product and then hand it off to a salesperson, you know, to go sell in. And so this job at Hillside really forced me to get out of my comfort zone because I was the person. If I didn't sell it, no one else would. So really going door to door was where we started, and we started going to independent markets and small grocers and just giving them samples. And, you know, I worked on my little pitch. It was awful the first couple times, but ultimately no one cared because they really just wanted to taste and try the sauce. And ultimately, you know, following up once someone did take us in, following up with a tasting, you know, and kind of doing that same routine of kind of selling the product to now people coming into those stores. And so it's that still reigns true. Even when we go into larger stores, you'll see we're in a number of Whole Foods, for example, but tastings are really what are bread and butter, even at Whole Foods. Like, we're still a fairly new brand. And so making sure that folks taste us and understand, like, why we're different, why we're, you know, what's our reason for being, is really important. And so for me, it's always been grassroots, just getting on the floor and going from door to door has been really successful for us, especially with the smaller independents. And those are where you find your most loyal, like, consumers, because they are going to those independent stores, you know, once, twice, three times a week. The buyer at those stores, the grocery buyer, typically knows their customers by name. You know, and so you'll get feedback from those managers in those stores because they know very intimately what their shoppers like and don't like. So it's been great being able to kind of build that network of independence, as well as build, you know, the big wins are great, the big grocery wins are great, but there's just so much more data and so much more, you know, connection with the product that you get from those independents because they know their shoppers so well and they typically try your sauce and eat your sauce and also, like, well, they'll talk it up to their shoppers as well. So it's been twofold. And as we grow, trying to figure out how to maintain a large network of independents, and also, to your earlier point, making sure that we're able to maintain a network of farmers markets as well, because I think you get that same kind of ground level direct, you know, information and feedback from the consumer at farmers markets. And so that intimacy, never want to lose that no matter how big you get, because that helps to drive a lot of what you do, even as you grow.
Absolutely. And I think that your strategy of being able to give people tastings is super smart because people are so brand loyal, where if it's mayo, they only stick to Hellmann's, and peanut butter, they only stick to Skippy's or Jif. And so people tend to be a little bit hesitant to kind of venture out from what they typically buy. So with your tastings, I mean, it gives them that opportunity to try it and then realize, okay, I actually really like this, and now I'm going to buy more of it and kind of work it into my rotation.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, the brand loyalty is definitely a real thing. The good thing, though, that we have in the sauce category, or at least specifically the hot sauce category, is that it's almost similar to like craft beer. Like you have your one or two brands that you really like, but you're always willing to try other ones, right? And so that's where tasting comes in, because mostly it's like, you know, there are certain categories where that brand loyalty is so strong, they don't even want to taste anything else. It's like, I know what I like. Right. Don't give me anything else. I think with this, yeah, with hot sauce, it's a little bit more open where it's like, yes, I love, you know, my fill in the blank. I won't advertise for someone else. But I love my fill in the blank hot sauce, but here's this new Hillside Harvest. I want to give this.
Yeah.
What's this all about? And so it's similar to like that craft beer experience where, you know, you go to Trillium and get your, you know, six pack every day, but you're more than happy to try Night Shift, or you're more than happy to try something else.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And a fun question, what is your personal favorite food to prepare with the hot sauce or use the hot sauce with?
So my favorite food, so this is probably by default, but I think our pineapple Fresno is amazing on pizza, and it's amazing. And so a lot of times, if I'm being lazy, I'll just order a pizza and I'll make a quick margarita and I'll just take the pineapple and douse it on everything, including the margarita. And so that's a go-to. Now that it's warm out, the jerk is used probably once a week. We do some jerk chicken on the grill, jerk burgers, that's delicious. And it's perfect for grilling season. Perfect for any time of the year, but specifically for grilling season, one of my favorite things that we've watched so far.
Awesome. I think that's very cool. And for any of our listeners who are tuning into this episode and have already started their product-based business and are in the early stages, or maybe they're thinking about starting one, is there any advice you would give to them for doing so in Massachusetts, like something that you've learned along the way that you wish you knew earlier or that really helped you in your journey?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing from Mass, and I alluded to it before, is that there's a real strong community feel here. And it's, you know, we're a large metropolitan area in Boston, but it still feels fairly small. And so people are it seems like the feeling is that people are a lot more willing to share and collaborate. And so if you're looking for information, even if they may, you know, be a competitor, I think it would behoove you to reach out and try to strike up a conversation, because I think, especially here in Massachusetts, people tend to be a lot more open about, you know, they're not going to give you trade secrets, but they'll definitely be a lot more open about, you know, helping someone out and giving them evidence. And so that's what I've experienced. And I wish I did more of that prior to launching. I don't think it would have changed the course at all, but it just, information is always great, right? And the more information you have. So I think, you know, I would tell folks not to be afraid to reach out to people, regardless if they're perceived as competitors or what have you. I think people tend to, you never know where your track may lead you down the line, and you may end up, you know, hiring someone that you talked to that was once a competitor but since sold their company and is looking for opportunity. You know, I just think people tend to be a lot more open than we think here in Massachusetts, and are willing to share their experiences. And you should definitely reach out.
I agree. I remember I spoke with someone, because I full-time own a marketing agency. And when I was kind of in the early stages, I asked a question to someone who also owned an agency that I really looked up to. And what they had told me, which really stuck with me, was because of the people who helped them as they were starting out and mentored them, they wanted to give back and do the same to other people who were starting out. And I was like, wow, that's such a good point. And it's something that's so true to exactly what you mentioned, is that people are so open and willing to go on a quick Zoom call with you or meet you for coffee and be able to kind of let you pick their brain and be able to understand their experience and what they would suggest and advice that they would give from someone who has had that skin in the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what would you say has been kind of like your process for managing doing it all? Because as you mentioned at the beginning, you're a one person show and you wear all of those hats. So that's something a lot of people who are newer in business end up doing as well, is kind of focusing on everything themselves before they get to the point where they can outsource or hire internally. And so how do you just manage the time and dedication to all of those different projects that you have going on?
Yeah, I mean, if you can help me figure that one out, I have no idea. No, I've gotten better at figuring out how to prioritize. It sounds simple, but it's like I've always been like, I'm way too analytical and I get uncomfortable when things aren't planned out. And you learn very quickly within the first year of starting your business that you have to get comfortable with things like hitting the floor. And so it's better that the low priority things hit the floor than the high priority things. So you get very good at prioritizing. And it's just that you get to a point where it's impossible to do everything. And everything includes everything with the business, but then also your life doesn't go on pause, right? Like you still have, you know, you may have kids or a spouse or family members that need your help, whatever the case may be. And those things have to be taken care of. And those should obviously be ideally top of the list, priority, and then everything else falls after that. But it's been a journey of just trying to make sure that each day you wake up and factor out like what needs to be done today, what can be held off until tomorrow or the weekend, and kind of go from there. And ideally, you know, I've gotten better at, I had this conversation yesterday actually with someone that we were talking about time management. And I used to always say yes, because we're in a stage where I just wanted to do everything. I never wanted to miss an opportunity. And you have to realize that sometimes by taking on opportunities, you're actually deprioritizing something that should be a top priority.
Yes.
And that opportunity may not really come to fruition in terms of what you expected it to be. And so really getting better at evaluating other things, like before you load up your plate, evaluate whether you really need that extra, you know, thing that you're putting on your plate. And it's all about time management, right? So it all goes into that formula of prioritizing what you currently have on your plate and making a good assessment of new things that you bring into your agenda, and making sure that there's return on those things that justify them taking up space versus, you know, passing on them for a future opportunity until you finish the stuff that you currently have to do.
Right.
And that's easier said than done, obviously. And it's been a process, but it's one that I've gotten more comfortable with just saying no sometimes and taking care of the stuff that I need to take care of.
Yeah, I love that advice. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes to remember, which is something along the lines of saying yes to one opportunity means you're saying no to something that you really feel passionate about and really want to pursue. And it's so true. Again, as entrepreneurs, we are so limited with the time that we have. And if we're constantly getting pulled in all these different directions of things that aren't serving us or bringing us closer to reaching our goals, then it's just kind of taking away from what we want to achieve.
Absolutely. And it's difficult for us because we're of the mindset that we can do it all.
Yes. Yep.
And sometimes, you know, a good slap of reality needs to be put on us in order for us to really, you know, take a step back and slow down a little bit.
So true.
Yeah.
So true. And to shift gears a little bit, what are your favorite local businesses throughout the state to support? Can be anything. So any vendors that you might work with or products you love to buy, whatever it may be.
So I would say in terms of folks that I love to work with, I'll give a shout out to Volante Farms, Pemberton Farms. Those two places were, Belmont, Spirit of Gourmet in Belmont. Those three places were my first three places that I went to. And today are like my top independents. Like they crank. And so, I mean, they've just been really supportive. And so I love going to their stores because they're just like, they have everything. So those places, in terms of businesses, you guys have to try Yamaku Drinks. They're a West African ginger juice drink out of the kitchen that's really delicious. Off Our Rocker Cookies, a sweet potato-based cookie company, also out of Commonwealth Kitchen. And Happy Africa Gourmet, they do spices, peanut sauces, and things like that, also out of Commonwealth. And Yogi, so they used to be called Yogi Boss. They're now Prevera. You can find them in Whole Foods. And they're like yogurt-based, like marinated balls that like are they would use them instead of like a cheese spread. They are absolutely delicious.
Oh, sounds amazing. You're making me hungry.
My fiance loves. So I she would get angry if I did not mention that. But no, I think like the food space here in Boston is booming. There's a ton of places. And so, you know, I would just, whatever, you know, even if it's not the stores that I mentioned, go to a smaller independent store, as well as like, you know, couple your shopping trips at Whole Foods and Stop and Shop and places like that, with places like those smaller spaces that have a deep connection to the community, because I think those places are where you're going to find the smaller businesses that are you know, first starting out, are typically going to those smaller retailers to share their products. So that's where you're going to find all these like new and interesting products are in those smaller spaces. So I would just, you know, and also farmers markets. I would definitely encourage people to do, you know, if you have the time, try to go to an independent farmers market as well as a traditional grocer to get your stuff. And that way you're guaranteed you're going to get local fresh produce and fresh products that have real people here in Massachusetts behind them.
Right.
Yeah. That's my soapbox.
Well, Kamal, thank you so much again for being a guest on Right Here in Mass. I really enjoyed our conversation because of the fact that you just do something so cool and so different from what we've had other guests doing. And so I would love to give our listeners the opportunity to connect with you further in case they'd like to do so. So please share where they can find you online.
Yes, so online, you can go to hillsidesauce.com. Check out our Instagram and Facebook at Hillside Harvest Sauce. You can order online. You can find a store near you, or you can just, you know, check out some of our pictures on Instagram and interact with us that way too. No problem.
Awesome. And I will list those links in the show notes in case anyone missed them, so they can click through from there. But thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley. It was great.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.